this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. And we start on the front page with the cover story headline, Rise of the Rest. The next wave of industry partnerships and consolidation is here, along with opportunities for smaller and mid-sized Triangle Area contract research organizations. But the industry may be facing severe headwinds. That's the headline on the front page. The actual article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with another headline. Will this boom last? The CRO industry, led by Quintiles, was born in the Triangle and remains a critical driver of the economy. This article is written by Jennifer Henderson. 3 decades of independence for Quintiles Transnational Holdings, which rose from humble beginnings on UNC Chapel Hill's campus to become a global juggernaut with thousands of employees, came to a screeching halt last year when it merged with IMS Health Holdings of Danbury, Connecticut. Quintiles, under founder Dennis Gillings, helped make the Triangle the birthplace of the contract research organization. The region is now a hub for CROs, which handle the crucial clinical study needs of pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies, government organizations, and other parties. That work takes the lead on the regulatory approval process for the commercialization of drugs and medical devices that can save lives and produce billions in revenue. While Quintiles led the creation of the industry, the Triangle is now home to a long roster of both well-established veterans and new recruits. Companies such as Inc. Research and PRA Health Sciences employ thousands of people, many with high salaries. The bulk of the world's leading CROs are based in the Triangle, and their impact is felt in dramatic ways. Collectively, the top 10 CROs in the Triangle employ more than 11,000 locally. But the industry is changing, and fast. A plurality of pharmaceutical development watchers agree that the industry is going to consolidate in the coming years, with the market leaders buying smaller entities to get into specific areas of clinical development. Already, the $40-plus billion industry is vastly fragmented, with Quintiles IMS leading the pack. A PricewaterhouseCoopers report released last year concluded the mergers and acquisitions among healthcare services companies will be one of the biggest stories in healthcare, and it is fraught with ominous trends for CROs. M&A likely will eliminate preferred partners status, like when drug giants such as Eli Lilly, Pfizer, and Merck prefer particular CROs to conduct their clinical trials. When two companies merge, those partnerships could go away and be replaced by scores of other drug research companies willing to do more with less. For the Triangle, it becomes a high-stakes game, not just because of the large numbers of workers directly employed, but also because of thousands of people in Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill, and the Research Triangle Park area who are in the services sector that cater to these CROs. And now, there's another twist, Donald Trump. On March 7, President Trump tweeted that he is, quote, working on a new system where there will be competition, unquote, in the pharmaceutical business, and that, quote, pricing for the American people will come way down, unquote. Immediately, shares of major drug firms fell, some as much as 10% during the first few hours of trading. The Tufts Center for the Study of Drug Development, in its most recent study, said it costs $2.9 billion to bring a new drug to market, including cost of capital, out-of-pocket expenses, R&D, and post-approval expenditures. If the pharmaceutical industry is given a mandate to reduce the development cost, and there is an acceleration in U.S. and Food and Drug Administration's approval process, billings for CROs inevitably will drop, and that would significantly increase their operational risk. For now, however, one of the Triangle's fastest-growing sectors is expanding across nearly all sizes. Other names rising. Raleigh-based Inc. Research announced in December that it will bring 550 new jobs to North Carolina over the next 5 years. The average salary of those jobs will be $75,000. On the company's February earnings call, Inc. Research said it had topped $1 billion in net service revenue for the first time last year. We went public in 2014 and had been growing very well up until that point. Through the IPO and through 14, 15, and 16, we've had great growth, CEO Alastair MacDonald says. Unfortunately, we've hit a flat spot in that growth for 2017 just by a little bit of a weakness in some of the sales that we had at the end of last year, as well as an elongation in the decision cycle, but also an elongation in some of the project work that we actually deliver. Inc. Research employs 1,025 people in the Triangle and more than 1,400 in North Carolina. It has added roughly 175 employees in the state over the last 12 months, according to MacDonald. Looking ahead, MacDonald says, the company will continue to invest in its therapeutic capability and its functional service provider capabilities, including its investigator payment offerings. Functional service provider, or FSP, offerings allow customers to pick and choose specific tasks to be outsourced when it comes to clinical development. Those continued investments and initiatives for Inc. Research are not all competition with other CROs, says MacDonald. There are some new services in there that I think will drive demand. MacDonald says the company is looking to grow in other ways, whether that means acquisitions or inorganic pathways. Keeping Inc. Research was significant for the Triangle. The company considered hefty incentive packages to leave for Cleveland or Nashville, Tennessee. $26.5 million and $13.7 million, respectively, but opted for Morrisville with a total incentives package of $10.6 million. We've always had a policy that we would hire talent wherever we see it, and we see a lot of talent in North Carolina, says MacDonald. Inc. officials say the new facility pulls all of that team together from two locations in Raleigh into a new facility. There's lots of collaboration space, there's better amenities there, and it kind of moves us more toward the center of the talent pool, close to RTP, says MacDonald. Not far away is another $1 billion plus CRO in PRA Health Sciences, which is also growing significantly and inking big partnerships. PRA's service revenue hit $1.58 billion last year, up 14.8% from the year prior. The company, located behind Crabtree Valley Mall, anticipates mid-teen growth in service revenue for 2017. Chief Financial Officer Linda Bedore says PRA currently employs more than 900 people in North Carolina and more than 13,000 globally in about 70 offices. We can service 90 countries out of those facilities, she says. In September, PRA announced a partnership with Japanese pharmaceutical giant Takeda Pharmaceutical, and just last month, the two companies announced an expansion of that partnership through the formation of an equally owned joint venture focused on clinical trials and drug safety services to Japan. The deal will involve the transfer of 60 Takeda employees to PRA, as well as the transfer of 140 Takeda employees to a new jointly owned subsidiary, according to the companies. Regarding similar deals to its one with Takeda, Bedore says PRA is looking at more of those. But PRA is expanding closer to home as well. Bedore says the company is opening an office in Wilmington with local hires that will have a capacity of roughly 50 to 75 employees. Looking forward, Bedore says PRA will be focused on diversifying its client base and new technology. Along with North Carolina, she says the company will continue to expand globally to secure the right patients for certain clinical trials and meet the approval needs in countries outside the U.S. Fertile grounds. The Triangle's reputation as an academic hub is one reason the area has been conducive to CROs over the years, says Jefferies analyst David Windley. Historically, both academics and doctors at universities have been involved in the core business functions of CROs, running trials and researching drugs to aid pharmaceutical companies in development. That was the case for Quintiles Gillings, a biostatistician at UNC Chapel Hill. Windley notes the success of Quintiles spawned many other CROs in the Triangle. It also doesn't hurt that a number of major CRO clients, including UK-based GlaxoSmithKline, have called RTP home, he says. The park has served as a way to fuel economic development in North Carolina through scientific companies and jobs, he adds. In Wilmington, pharmaceutical product development also saw the state as an attractive home, Its employee base in the Triangle is now comparable to how many people it employs on the coast. North Carolina offers particularly fertile ground to the CRO industry because of its strong pharmaceutical, technological, and academic base. That foundation offers a wealth of talent and expertise that can support the staffing needs of CROs. It also helps fuel the startup of smaller biotech companies that are important to the overall drug development industry, says David Johnson, Executive Vice President of Global Clinical Development at PPD. The company has about 3,500 employees in the state, he said. In 5 years, Johnston said, PPD grew from 11,500 employees overall in 2011 to more than 18,500 at the end of 2016. Chapel Hill-based Roe has called the Triangle home since the 1980s. It employs about 400 people and had revenue of approximately $75 million in 2016. The company anticipates revenue of approximately $80 million in 2017. For us, a strong and thriving industry in the Triangle is incredibly beneficial, says Roe CEO, co-CEO Laura Helms-Reese. It keeps a good pool of talent here, she says, while also noting the company, in turn, works hard to retain its talent through flexible work hours and positive on-site draws like game rooms, food trucks, and book clubs. In an industry known for turnover, she says Roe's stability in its workforce has aided in sustaining new business. The Triangle has also attracted CROs from out of the state. In 2007, Bedour and current PRA CEO Colin Shannon joined PRA when it was based in the Washington suburb of Reston, Virginia. Back then, says Bedour, revenue was under $400 million per year, and there were less than 70 employees based in North Carolina. Bedour and Shannon were keen on moving the company's headquarters to North Carolina, lured by the more affordable cost of living and facilities and the proximity to biotechnology companies and major universities. While some at the company worried about another proximity, that of Quintiles, she says others saw it as an opportunity for fielding talent as well. United to conquer. The maturing of the CRO industry has meant there is a vastly different growth outlook than we would have been thinking about 10 years ago, says Andalus Windley. A slowing industry and smaller opportunity set encourages consolidation as well as the need for further differentiation, he says, which is exemplified in the recent merger of Quintiles and IMS Health. Factors such as slow revenue growth for pharmaceutical companies, as well as Trump commentary regarding drug prices, which has amounted to some perceived risk when it comes to small biotech funding, are impacting research and development spending, Windley says. Adding those factors mean R&D spending at 3% growth is probably not accelerating from here. Essentially, impacted outsourcing and R&D spending may mean slowed growth for CROs, he says. As for the unexploited opportunity, Windley says that CROs typically focused on Phase 2 or Phase 3 trial work may look to Phase 4 work after the approval process as an area of growth moving forward. He says larger CROs may look to capitalize on some of that opportunity and make acquisitions in that space. Inc. Research's McDonald agrees that there will be opportunities for acquisitions. As the CRO industry matures, there will be inevitable consolidation, says McDonald. CROs will be looking to differentiate, he says. There will be opportunities in the next couple of years for that consolidation in the CRO industry to occur. I think the two drivers that might push it that way are if Big Pharma starts to consolidate, but also if we see as an industry that outsourcing trend, if it flattens out because people will have to grow, and they'll have to grow by taking market share, says McDonald. At the same time, he says, we're not sitting here waiting to be acquired. We're getting on with our business. Reports of being acquired, however, have swirled around PPD recently. Reuters reported of a possibility of an $8 billion sale of PPD to Burlington-based Laboratory Corporation of America Holdings, which scooped up Covance Incorporated for $6.1 billion in 2015. PPD has not commented on the reports and has been focused on its own acquiring lately. Over the years, we've grown both organically and through acquisition, and we've expanded the breadth of our capabilities, says PPD's Johnston, pointing to acquisitions in 2013, 2014, and 2016. Roe, meanwhile, has never done a merger or acquisition, and we're not particularly interested in growing in that methodology, says Reese. She adds, our strategy is different enough that what makes sense for us doesn't always make sense for everyone else. Reese says that she expects some of Roe's larger competitors will continue to look to mergers and acquisitions as the market heats up in order to maintain the growth that they need. What's clear is change is ahead. Dr. Robert Califf, who founded the Duke Clinical Research Institute and rose to FDA commissioner, says he believes that the need for human studies will continue to increase, thus keeping the local clinical research space vibrant for both academic and industry players. But some of the market factors that have the potential to impact the CRO industry currently and in the near future include globalization and related uncertainties following the U.S. presidential election, information technology changes, and the way that large integrated health systems will interact with CROs, he says. Even with Trump's continued talk to bring drug prices down, Califf says being in a period of strong technological innovation will ensure new products will be developed one way or another. As for potential changes to the FDA approval process, Califf says he doesn't see big changes for the CRO industry in the near term. Companies, he says, are still going to want to have good data on their products. And now we're going to the Viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, the editor of Triangle Business Journal. And the headline, Work-Life Balance Critical in CRO Sector. Perhaps I'm starting this column wrong. Maybe the headline should say, work-life balance is critical in every industry. But for the more than 11,000-plus workers directly employed by contract research organizations, CROs, the issue may be as critical as it has ever been since a soft-spoken biostatistician from the UK named Dennis Gillings showed the world you can make money by doing other people's research. As reporter Jennifer Henderson points out in this week's centerpiece, the CRO business, and by extension the pharmaceutical business, is staring at some severe headwinds in the next couple of years. For now, however, the Triangle area's CROs are firing on all cylinders. Jobs are being filled with salaries in excess of $75,000, and the Triangle CROs are poaching from competing companies to fill slots in proposal development, analysis, and web marketing, among others. Over the years, we have heard from scores of local workers in the industry who say that while their jobs at these CROs are satisfying, the hours can sometimes be intolerable. Sure, one can argue that if you're getting paid $75,000 to $100,000 in the Triangle, more than double the average income of individuals in the Raleigh-Durham metro area, you should be working a little harder and perhaps a little longer. But if the work-life balance goes unchecked, it is more than likely all companies would suffer in the end. According to Account Temps, about half the workers for all industries are stressed at work, and that more than 60% indicated that work-related pressure has increased dramatically in the past 5 years. Even executives at those companies acknowledge that their teams are stressed, the Account Temps survey points out. With the CRO sector, there's another element that is throwing the work-life balance off track, and that is the pipeline of new business. And that generally is the biggest problem for a fragmented industry where the pie may be getting bigger, but there are more players gnawing at the big giants, one specialty research at a time. To hire additional workers means adding overhead, and CROs are becoming increasingly shy of added fixed costs. So, if new work comes, the existing pool takes the load. That may be true today in virtually every sector, but it is worse among CROs because most of the industry's workers are spread all over the world. Often, a collaboration means taking conference calls and filling Excel spreadsheets at 11 p.m. at night or at 5 a.m. in the morning. As Henderson points out, the Triangle is the epicenter of CRO growth. Therefore, our CEOs and site leads must make an extra effort to address the needs of its workers. Most days, mothers and fathers should be able to attend their sons and daughters' sports leagues or dance recitals. If not, we all lose. And also on the Viewpoint page, we're going to read the other column written by Scott Sandell and Sheil Tile. And they are partners at New Enterprise Associates, a venture capital firm in Maryland that has investments in Triangle Companies. The headline, A Passionate Plea to President Trump. In 1977, an investor named Richard Cromlech met a young man who wanted to develop and sell something most people had never heard of, a personal computer. Cromlech made a small investment in the fledgling enterprise, an early example of the formidable instincts that would make him one of the world's most successful venture capitalists. The outcome was extraordinary by any measure. The man, Steve Jobs, and his company, Apple, pioneered two of the seminal technology transformations of the last century, desktop computing and mobile devices. Cromlech, for his part, went on to co-found New Enterprise Associates, which grew under his leadership to become one of the world's largest venture capital firms. Although it is difficult to gauge the precise impact of U.S. immigration policy on Cromlech's career and his firm's success, there is no question that foreign-born talent has played a vital role. Between 1995 and 2005, immigrant founders started more than half of new companies in Silicon Valley, according to the Kauffman Foundation. But what does that have to do with Apple? Steve Jobs wasn't an immigrant, true, but his biological father was a Syrian-born immigrant who came to the U.S. to study, first at Columbia University and later at the University of Wisconsin, where he met Jobs' biological mother. When she became pregnant, the pair decided to put the baby up for adoption. While it's impossible to predict Apple's fate had Clara and Paul Jobs not adopted the child, it is highly likely that under both current and proposed immigration policy, Steve Jobs' biological parents would never have met. The story is emblematic of the history of venture capital and Silicon Valley in one important way. Success, and very possibly existence, depends upon immigration policy that enables and encourages foreign-born individuals to study, work, and live in the United States. Immigrants have disproportionately empowered our country's innovative community through entrepreneurship. Among venture-backed companies that went public between 2006 and 2012, one-third had at least one immigrant founder at the helm, according to the National Venture Capital Association. Today, more than 40% of the Fortune 500 companies were founded by immigrants or their children. Availability of H-1B visas to highly skilled workers is critical to the growth and success of many U.S. companies, not just tech giants like Facebook and Google, but also the thousands of startup businesses that are building the next wave of innovative technologies, products, and services. Yet, the hurdles to attain H-1B visas have grown considerably in recent years, and we are deeply concerned that some of President Donald Trump's proposed immigration initiatives could ultimately cast a long, dark shadow on American innovation. As Trump and Congress begin to shape immigration policy under this new administration, we hope they will acknowledge the critically important role immigrants play in fueling a healthy U.S. economy. We hope that they will set priorities and policies that empower innovation and entrepreneurship with a commitment to enabling the world's best talent to study, work, and build companies in the U.S. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. The main headline, Solar Leaders Have Dim View of Duke Energy Proposals. Longer days and sunnier weather is always welcome in the North Carolina spring, but right now, how that sunshine is harvested and turned into power is the source of a serious dispute between Duke Energy and many in the state's solar industry. Duke Energy is asking the North Carolina Utilities Commission to change how solar power is developed and purchased. Duke must offer a 15-year contract to purchase power for any project under 5 megawatts. But Duke is balking at this, since the price of solar power is going down, and arguing that this system costs ratepayers money. Duke also wants more control over where solar projects are built on its grid and has pitched this as a way to save ratepayers money. But solar leaders tell Biz they feel, well, blinded by this approach. It's really bizarre that they are taking this hero's tack, says Ralph Thompson, the CEO of Raleigh-based Holocene Clean Energy and chair of the North Carolina Clean Energy Business Alliance. The solar industry, the solar marketplace in North Carolina, is at a place now where we are in position to save ratepayers' money, he says. Both Thompson and Chris Carmody, the executive director of the NCCEBA, argue that utilities often buy long-term deals as a buffer against turbulent markets. The big picture is they are trying to say that these 15-year contracts are a problem, Thompson says. The reality is they are actually what a prudent business person would do to balance a portfolio. Carmody says Duke Energy's position is specious, given that the Utilities Commission reviews rates every 2 years. Solar has one distinct cost, and that is construction, he says, so it's highly predictable, and that predictable fixed cost is something that benefits utilities when other costs are much more volatile. Film documents impact of Asian Indians on North Carolina. Remarkable Journey, a film that highlights the growth of the Asian Indian community in North Carolina, debuts March 11 at 9 p.m. at the Carolina Theater in Durham. The film, through first-person stories, explores how a pioneering generation from the country of India settled in North Carolina and how that culture has made an impact on the state. The documentary also will be shown 3 times at Cary Theater on March 30, 7 p.m., April 1st, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m., and April 6th, 2 p.m. All screenings are free. No party for demolition. There wasn't much pomp and circumstance this week when Raleigh real estate developer Gordon Grubb sent in the demolition crews to tear down the 2-story Allegheny building at the Glenwood Place Office Park in Raleigh. 10 years ago, when Grubbs' firm, Grubb Ventures, tore down the old Kogarama building next door, now replaced by the 5-story 3700 Glenwood office, he threw a wrecking ball party complete with food and entertainment by the North Carolina Symphony Jazz Trio. "Yes, it is bittersweet," he says. "I wish we could have done a party. Unfortunately, this demolition was more complicated." The Kogarama and Allegheny buildings were among the first built in the early 1970s at the office park that used to be known as the Koger Center. Koger Properties of Jacksonville, Florida, in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, was a pioneer in the development of suburban office parks, eventually building 350 office buildings in 36 parks across the southeast. The 23-acre Koger Center in Raleigh was sold to Grubb Management in 1999 for $22.5 million. Airbnb says most of its hosts in Raleigh are women. Just in time for International Women's Day, March 8, California room share firm Airbnb released data that show women represent the bulk of the hosts using its app. In Raleigh, women make up 62% of the metro's Airbnb hosts, according to the company, and that count has continued to rise. According to Airbnb, the typical annual income for women hosts in the city of Oaks totals $4,010. Across all of the United States, women represent 57% of hosts. North Carolina's most popular attractions. Take a look at the top tourist attractions in the state, and you'll see the number one spot isn't on the coast or in the mountains, but right here in Raleigh. For the 3rd year in a row, the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences attracted the most visitors on the list of 30 prominent destinations in the Tar Heel State. But it wasn't the only local spot to draw a crowd. Overall, Raleigh had 4 locations on the list, and Durham and Chapel Hill each had 1. The Museum of Natural Sciences had a whopping 937,341 guests in 2016. One note, the popular Biltmore Estate in Asheville no longer releases data on attendance. The numbers were compiled by Carolina Publishing and Associates. Former Senate candidate joins Raleigh Law Firm. Deborah Ross, the former U.S. Senate candidate and member of the North Carolina House from 2003 to 2013, has joined the Raleigh office of Smith Moore Leatherwood. Ross will focus on client needs related to infrastructure, energy, and economic development. I've been very fortunate in all of my jobs as an attorney that I've gotten to participate and sometimes break ground in areas that are good for the client, but also good for the community, says Ross. While serving in the state legislature, Ross also taught at Duke University School of Law and worked at a firm known as Stiers and Kemmerold. At Smith Moore Leatherwood, she has linked back up with Gray Stiers and Karen Kemmerold. Ross, a Democrat, served as general counsel of Public Transit Authority, GO Triangle, from 2013 to 2015, before running against incumbent Senator Richard Burr in 2016. In terms of business opportunities for clients moving forward, Ross notes that there is a renewed emphasis at the state and federal levels on infrastructure and how infrastructure is not just beneficial for our health, safety, and welfare, but also economic development. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to On Retail and Real Estate. That page is written by Amanda Hoyle. The main headline: sources, Pfizer weighing $100 million plant expansion in Lee County. After years of watching pharmaceutical jobs and investments leaving the area, Lee County commissioners are setting the stage to potentially land a $100 million economic development deal under discussion with global drug manufacturer Pfizer. Multiple sources have confirmed Pfizer is pursuing plans to invest $100 million in a new life sciences research and production facility that could either go to the company's existing drug manufacturing campus in Sanford or to another Pfizer-owned facility in Massachusetts. Spokeswoman Kim Banker confirms Pfizer is scoping potential sites in Sanford for a new gene therapy site, but noted that work is still in preliminary stages and she could not give further details. Pfizer in August acquired leading-edge gene therapy company Bamboo Therapeutics in Chapel Hill in a deal valued at $645 million. Executives at Bamboo have said it would take an investment of close to $100 million to scale up commercial production of its gene therapy processes. In Lee County, Pfizer already owns a 230-acre manufacturing campus that employs about 450 people involved in clinical manufacturing of drugs in development. At its peak, when the former Wyeth Pharmaceuticals plant was still producing children's vaccines, the Sanford plant employed about 1,500 people. Much of the vaccine production moved to Ireland following Pfizer's 2009 merger with Wyeth. Neither Lee County officials nor Sanford Growth Alliance Executive Director Bob Joyce have publicly disclosed the identity of the company, referred to in public meetings by its code name, Project Panda. But Pfizer's connections to the county are well known. During a public hearing of the Lee County Board of Commissioners on February 20, Lee County Board Vice Chair Tim Sloan recused himself, noting that he could potentially have a financial interest in the project. Sloan is an employee of Pfizer. The board voted to approve an economic development incentive package valued up to $1.4 million over 5 years for the project, which could also create about 50 new jobs. Rise Biscuits founder deals in play for 85 more locations across the U.S. After spending the last couple of years tweaking their plans, Rise Biscuits Donuts founder Tom Ferguson says the company is ready to go national. Ferguson and his franchisee have so far opened 10 locations in North Carolina, spread among the Triangle, Charlotte, Greensboro, and Wilmington. Its newest location in Holly Springs, its eighth in the Triangle, opens March 18. That Tar Heel State focus, however, will all soon change. Rise's first location outside of North Carolina will open April 1 in Dallas, followed shortly thereafter with new locations in Savannah, Georgia, and Richmond, Virginia. To date, he says, they have operating agreements for 85 new Rise locations nationwide. We're right in the target of where we plan to be at this point, Ferguson says. Magnum Flats condo project breaks ground in downtown Durham. Construction crews are going vertical on a $9.3 million five-story condominium building on Mangum Street in downtown Durham. It's the latest quirky infill development project by Durham architects Scott Harmon and David Arneson, along with Raleigh's White Oak Properties. The project at 515 North Mangum Street, called Mangum Flats, will have 22 residential units, each with a private balcony or courtyard and access to the building's furnished roof deck. 12 of the 22 units, which are priced from $303,000 to $688,000, are already reserved by buyers with purchase contracts. Arizona company to buy Raleigh's Savvy Homes. Arizona-based AV Homes Incorporated has struck a deal to acquire one of the Triangle's largest local home building companies, Savvy Homes of Raleigh. The deal, valued at about $50 million in cash, would sell all of Savvy Homes' assets in the Triangle, Sand Hills, and Fayetteville regions to AV Homes, but keep the brand intact. Savvy Homes CEO Daryl Daigre and President George Aiken will continue to run the operations. In 2016, Savvy Homes delivered more than 250 homes among its 20 active communities in North Carolina. Vietnamese restaurant company to make Triangle debut. A Vietnamese-style restaurant called Co. that has already been making its mark in the Southeast will be opening this fall at Raleigh's North Hills. Co. owner and founder Greg Bauer has signed a lease for 3,680 square feet to open his fifth location on the ground level of the new AC Hotel, Raleigh North Hills. The restaurant's menu offers a variety of Pan-Asian cuisine, including banh mi, pho, ramen, dumplings, sushi, and signature cocktails. In Vietnamese, Co is the word for feast. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Transportation page written by Lauren Onasorge. The first headline, Bidders Eye North Carolina for Offshore Wind Farm. This month, energy companies from across the globe bid for the right to develop North Carolina's first offshore wind farm. A 122,405-acre tranche located off the coast of Kitty Hawk will be up for lease with a starting bid of just $244,810. The site begins 24 nautical miles from shore. Tracy Mariarty, spokeswoman for the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, says that developers will start bidding at 9 a.m. on March 16. With a recent $42.5 million bid winning 80,000 acres off the coast of New York, the final price tag could be much higher than that starting sum. Bids in New York started at just $158,700, according to BOEM. For the Kitty Hawk parcel, the agency had identified 9 qualified bidders, including Statoil, the Norwegian energy company that won that offshore lease deal in New York. Of the 9, at least 3 have already decided not to bid, according to comments they made to Triangle Business Journal. Canadian power producer Northland Power, whose 600-megawatt Gemini project is already spinning in the North Sea, is no longer interested, says spokeswoman Sarah Chirook. Nor is Outer Banks Ocean Energy, whose parent company, Apex Clean Energy, is planning a utility-scale wind farm in Chowan and Perquimans counties. And Natalie Mazie, a spokeswoman at Dutch oil and gas company Royal Dutch Shell, whose subsidiary, Shell Wind Energy, was also approved to bid, says her firm's assessment of the attractiveness of the opportunity just didn't merit continued interest. Moriarty says bidder turnover is expected. Generally speaking, we will not know the actual number of participants until auction day, she explains. The feds have held 6 competitive lease sales for offshore tranches so far, generating more than $58 million in high bids for more than 1 million acres of federal waters. The nation's first offshore wind farm, Deepwater Wind's $300 million Block Island wind farm off of Rhode Island, started spinning last year. Deepwater won the lease with a $3.8 million bid in 2013, according to BOEM. And in a box titled Closer Look, of the qualified bidders this time around, here's who could still be in the running for Kitty Hawk. Avangrid Renewables, Enbridge Holdings Green Energy LLC, Wind Future LLC, PNE Wind USA, Stat Oil Wind US LLC, and WPD Offshore Alpha LLC. Fuquay Varina project would improve traffic flow. Armed with a $4.5 million grant from the Capital Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, the town of Fuquay Varina is months away from breaking ground on the final stretch of its Judd Parkway Loop, a highway expected to support between 30,000 and 48,000 vehicles per day by 2040. Adam Mitchell, town manager of Fuquay Varina, says the project has been a two-decade effort. The current section at 2.2 miles is the last tranche needed to divert commuter traffic out of the town's core. In 2015, voters approved $21 million in transportation bonds to fund projects such as this. In the last year, including the Campo Cash, the town has secured $12.5 million in transportation grants. More than $7 million of that sum is earmarked for this highway section, where drivers from Johnston and Harnett counties travel to Research Triangle Park. The town isn't waiting on the North Carolina Department of Transportation to fund the $22 million project, Mitchell says. Fuquay Varina is fronting the balance after grants, which is about $14.5 million. To keep up with that demand of growth, cities and towns are just having to think about how to address transportation in different ways, Mitchell says. It used to be you'd wait on NCDOT, but now that just doesn't necessarily always keep up with the pace of growth. For Fuquay Varina, where each day 30,000 cars bottleneck at the Judd Parkway Main Street intersection, that growth is putting an immediate strain on town resources. The new section of road will be a four-lane median divided highway alternative to driving through town. In addition to curbs and gutters, the plans call for adding a 10-foot-wide asphalt side path to accommodate cyclists and joggers. Fuquay Varina is acquiring the 10 right-of-ways it needs for construction, which is expected to begin by mid-2018. The highway could be open in 2020. Asheville leads North Carolina in number of Airbnb guests, Raleigh third. Airbnb, the room share app that allows you to stay in a home instead of a hotel, is on the rise in North Carolina. Airbnb hosts in Raleigh earned more than $2.4 million in 2016. In Durham and Chapel Hill, hosts earned about $2 million and $1.1 million respectively, according to the San Francisco-based company. Statewide, the host community grew 83% in 2016 to 7,500, and the Airbnb platform earned $7.7 million in tax revenue for North Carolina. The top five North Carolina cities in terms of Airbnb guest arrivals in 2016, number one, Asheville, 105,400 guests. Number two, Charlotte, 33,700 guests. 3. Raleigh, 19,400 guests. 4. Wilmington, 17,000 guests. And 5. Durham, 14,200 guests. FTC releases details on fraud alerts for metro areas. When it comes to fraud and identity theft complaints, Raleigh tops Durham. That's according to the Federal Trade Commission's Consumer Sentinel Network, an online database of millions of consumer complaints available only to law enforcement. While Raleigh and Durham both pale when it comes to Homosassa Springs, Florida, the nationwide fraud leader at nearly 1,400 fraud complaints per 100,000 residents, both metros had their share of reports in 2016. The Durham Metro, which includes Chapel Hill, reported about 2,200 general fraud complaints, ranking it 147th among the hundreds of metros analyzed by CSN. Raleigh residents made nearly 5,500 reports, enough to rank it 104th. In terms of identity theft complaints, Raleigh ranked 53rd with 1,664 reports. Durham ranked 65th with 688 complaints. Overall, North Carolina ranked number 20 when it came to fraud and other complaints, with about 65,000 reported cases, or 641 per 100,000 residents. In terms of complaints, debt collection topped the list, accounting for more than 17,000 of those reports. In terms of identity theft, the state ranked 26th with more than 9,700 complaints, or more than 96 per 100,000. Breaking down North Carolina's top five complaints, debt collection 26%, imposter scams 15%, prizes, sweepstakes, and lotteries 9%, telephone and mobile services 9%, banks and lenders 6%. North Carolina defends Havelock bypass after Sierra Club lawsuit. 2 months after the Sierra Club filed a lawsuit against both the North Carolina Department of Transportation and the Federal Highway Administration over a planned 10-mile coastal highway, the state is responding to its accusers. The state repeatedly denies that it acted arbitrarily when finalizing plans to construct the $221 million U.S. 70 Havelock Bypass, according to the response filed this month by North Carolina Attorney General Josh Stein on behalf of NCDOT. The highway is planned to run from just north of Havelock to just north of the Craven-Carteret County line and is expected to boost freight traffic coming in and out of the Morehead City port. State officials have said the four-lane, median-divided freeway will allow truckers to avoid an area of U.S. 70 riddled with more than a dozen traffic signals. The Sierra Club said in its January lawsuit that the highway will pave over rare forest habitats. The group has accused the government of acting arbitrarily and capriciously, both when preparing its environmental impact statement and when handing down what's called a record of decision, the last environmental hurdle for the project, and it asked that a court stop the highway's construction. In its response, NCDOT denies the Sierra Club's claim that its draft environmental impact statement was based on inadequate information or analysis. Regardless of the suit, NCDOT still has a ways to go before it starts construction. The bypass is expected to impact 16 residents, one business, and one nonprofit, and right-of-way acquisitions are still ongoing. The lawsuit was filed by the Southern Environmental Law Center of Chapel Hill on behalf of the Sierra Club. And finally, in a section called They Said It, the quote, "For good reason, we've stayed out of non-accredited investing. As I look at how the regulation has really shaken out, I'm glad we're not doing it. It's not a great pathway for a lot of founders today." And that's from Chance Barnett, CEO of Los Angeles-based Crowdfunder, who visited Raleigh for a startup event at Pinkubator. He says there's too much cost associated with the current regulations for entrepreneurs to really realize the benefits. "A lot of the interest today is in biologicals and new digital ag tech activities. So when you find somebody who has a new angle on crop protection opportunities, it piques your interest." And that's from Jeff Neen, R&D licensing and new venture manager at Bayer, on why his firm was among those investing a combined $10 million in the AgTech Accelerator's first startup creation, Borogen. And now we turn to the A Better World page, written by Todd Cohen, who also publishes Philanthropy North Carolina. The headline on his column, "Co-op provides bikes for free in Durham." When Nayeli Garcia Crespo moved to Durham from Mexico City 2 years ago to become media and marketing manager at Sound Pure, a shop that sells high-end instruments and audio gear, she could not afford a car, so she bought a used bicycle. But the bike's chain soon fell off its sprockets and got jammed between the gears, so she wheeled the bike across the street from where she works to Durham Bicycle Cooperative, which then was located on Washington Street. At the co-op, she was told she could either buy or volunteer for a membership and then be assigned to a volunteer mechanic who would work with her to repair her bike. "So I was able to get home that night still using the same bike," says Garcia Crespo, who now serves as communications coordinator for the co-op. The all-volunteer nonprofit, which opened in 2007, works to make affordable bikes more accessible, reduce traffic, and protect the environment by teaching members to repair bikes, including their own bikes or those they refurbish at the co-op. It repairs many of its donated bikes, recycles bike parts, distributes bike helmets, offers a special program for refugees, and is developing a community garden in Beehive. Operating with an annual budget of about $56,000, the co-op in 2016 received more than 100 donated bicycles, including about 40 from Duke University that had been abandoned. To become a member, an individual may volunteer at the co-op shop for 3 hours or pay $30. After becoming a member, an individual has several options for getting a bike. More than 450 people, including 274 volunteers, attended training and repair sessions in 2016, and more than 150 people got refurbished bicycles. The co-op also worked with 86 refugees to earn memberships and worked with 42 adult refugees and 24 refugee children to earn bikes through a partnership with CWS Durham. It distributed 270 free youth helmets through a partnership with Safe Kids Durham and a donation of helmets from the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Last year, the co-op moved to a building adjacent to Duke Park on Acadia Street that the Durham Parks and Recreation Department has leased to it for free for 10 years. The co-op counts on partnerships and events to help raise money and awareness about bicycling. In 2016, for example, it partnered with New Belgium Brewing for the sixth year as a nonprofit beneficiary of proceeds from its Tour de Fat as the bike festival visited Durham. To help pay for equipping its new headquarters, the co-op has raised a total of $61,000 over 3 years in a capital campaign, including $10,600 in 2016. It's always looking for donated bikes and volunteer mechanics while trying to spread the word about bicycles. It's an inexpensive mode of transportation that doesn't pollute the environment, Garcia Crespo says, and it also reduces traffic. And in nonprofit news, Cary nonprofits get big gifts from Lazy Days. A total of 33 Cary-based nonprofits received grants as part of Cary's 40th Lazy Days Arts and Crafts Festival. The grants total $40,000 and support projects that benefit the Cary community. Since its inception, Lazy Days has awarded more than $700,000 to the community. For 40 years, the town's Lazy Days Festival has brought artists to and encouraged residents and visitors to explore downtown Cary. While the festival has grown in size and stature, it remains true to its commitment to bring the highest quality art, food vendors, and entertainment to Cary's downtown, said Adam Bell, Cary Festivals and Events Supervisor. Bailey's gives back. Bailey's Fine Jewelry donated more than $61,000 to local charities in 2016 through the A Time to Give program, the company said. A Time to Give provides customers with a complimentary watch battery replacement and in exchange requests a donation be made to that month's designated charity. Each month, Bailey selects a different nonprofit organization to receive the donations from A Time to Give. Hospitals team up to help out Band Together. Congratulations to Band Together, which got a big boost from the three major hospitals in Wake County. UNC Rex, Wake Med, and Duke Raleigh agreed to give $25,000 each to Band Together this year. Band Together supports a different nonprofit each year, and this year it's supporting the YMCA of the Triangle's effort to put a new facility in Southeast Raleigh. Band Together, which hosts its annual concert May 6 with Ben Folds performing at the Red Hat Amphitheater, is looking to raise more than $1 million this year. Matt Strickland, Band Together's executive director, said the group is very pleased that the three healthcare systems wanted to support such an impactful effort in the community. And with our remaining minutes with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll read as much as we can from the On Life Sciences page written by Jennifer Henderson. The first headline is FDA approves key product for Triton. Durham's Triton Medical announced March 6 that it has received U.S. Food and Drug Administration approval for its Triton side branch stent for the treatment of coronary bifurcation lesions. While the stent is already commercially available in several countries in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, according to Triton, it now becomes the first dedicated bifurcation device to be approved in the U.S. Novan's stock rises after major tumble. Shares of Novon soared more than 20% early this week after the company announced an update on the development of its product candidate SB204 for the treatment of acne. In January, mixed Phase 3 trial results for SB204 sent the company's stock down more than 75%, but March 6, the company said it is planning for a pre-submission meeting with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in the third quarter of this year, and as a result, possibly a new drug application submission in the first quarter of next year. Novan said in its announcement that it has sufficient cash on hand to fund operations at least through this year, but that the FDA approval process for SB204 and future operations will take additional funding. Biomerix gets FDA clearance to expand test. French life sciences company Biomerix, which is expanding in Durham, has received clearance from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for the expanded use of an existing test in the antibiotic resistance space. The company's Vitus Brahms PCT assay, which uses a protein called procalcitonin as a biomarker, is now available to assist healthcare providers in determining whether antibiotic treatment is necessary in cases of respiratory infections and sepsis, according to Biomerix. And in a section called He Said It, the quote, "As it relates to cardiovascular care, we have set up this whole campus in this new building as a plan that we could grow. We chose this location for a lot of reasons, one of which is it allows for us for expansion. We also have some built-in expansion space within the building as well." And that's from Chad Lefteris, Vice President of Operations at UNC Rex, ahead of opening the doors of the new $235 million North Carolina Heart and Vascular Hospital to patients March 5. And we're going to stop there as we run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.